Hello, and welcome to show number 2448 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Hello, and welcome to iOS 18, filled with new and useful accessibility features for people who are blind or have low vision.
Well, we thought about having the computer describe everything that's new in iOS 18, but we actually have a real guest instead this week.
Shelley Brisbane is a technology journalist and author, and we'll talk with her about her newly released update of her book, iOS Access for All, Your Comprehensive Guide to Accessibility for iPhone and iPad. We'll talk with Shelley about the new features in iOS 18 for blind and low vision users, including enhancements to the Braille keyboard, point and speak, hover typing, and Apple Intelligence. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Shelley Brisbane.
So this isn't an accessibility feature, but it is something new in iOS 18 that, again, as a low vision user, kind of helps me out. So there is the ability now to theme app icons on the home screen. So before, you got whatever icon the developer gave you. In some cases, you had a choice of icon colors, but now you can essentially have light mode or dark mode icons. And what that's great for is, because I always tell people, I'm somebody who likes light text or like light graphics on a dark background. And so I always tell people, you know, if you like that, have a dark home screen so that the icons will pop. Well, now you kind of have a choice. You can make your wallpaper anything you want, and you can fool around with the light or dark icon theming to make your icons stand out from the screen, but also be visible to you. Then you also have the ability to use larger icons with no text labels below them or smaller icons that have the name of the app below them. And that's just up to you, like which version you like and whether you need to be reminded by a text label what an icon is or whether you would like to have a larger version. And finally, because you no longer have to have apps contiguous on a grid, you can have empty spaces. You can fool around with creating space on your home screen. You can spread your apps further apart. So if it's easier for you to find them visually, or I guess even with VoiceOver, but mostly this is for folks with low vision, I guess, it's easier for you to find them visually when the apps are spread out from one another. You can do that. You can leave spaces between apps. And I found that a lot of fun to fool around with the look of my home screen.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
InnoSearch AI, an accessible e-commerce tool for the blind. You can find your favorite electronics, groceries, or do some early holiday shopping at InnoSearch.ai, now partnered with over 500,000 retailers. That's InnoSearch.ai.
And by
Glidance, pioneers of Glide, an intelligent guide for the blind and low vision community. Glide's AI-powered technology guides you around obstacles, hazards, and more, providing audio and haptic feedback, getting you where you need to go safely and independently. More information is at glidance.io/eyes. That's glidance.io/EYES.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by reintroducing Shelley.
Well, today's guest has been with us on Eyes on Success a number of times in the past, and she always has some new information to share with us that's very useful. So, Shelley, why don't you remind people who you are and some of the things that you do?
Hey there, I'm Shelley Brisbane. I have been a writer for as long as I've been working, both as a journalist and as an author of books. My background is in technology journalism. I worked at Mac User Magazine way back in the day. And then at some point, I started to write books about technology, mostly in the mainstream. Then I began writing about accessibility a little bit more than 10 years ago with the iOS Access for All book. I also am a radio producer at a public radio show called Texas Standard. And I do a podcast called Lions, Towers, and Shields, which is about classic films.
And we've been interviewing you about these books about technology for almost as long as you've been writing them.
Entirely possible.
And you are visually impaired yourself, right?
Right.
So some of these books particularly have some hints for people with vision issues.
Yeah, I'm low vision. I cover all of the accessibility related stuff in the iOS and iPadOS platforms. But I like to think that the low vision coverage is particularly helpful and particularly focused because I'm the user of this kind of stuff. So.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is what's new in accessibility features introduced in iOS 18, as explained in Shelley Brisbane's recently updated book, iOS Access for All, Your Comprehensive Guide to Accessibility for iPhone and iPad.
Well, Shelley, you've been making this valuable resource available for many years, and it's very detailed and very thorough. So I thought we could start by having you remind people about the name of the book and giving us a quick summary of how it's structured.
Sure. The book is called iOS Access for All, Your Comprehensive Guide to Accessibility for iPad and iPhone. And what I do is, after a couple of introductory chapters that explain about Apple devices and the Apple ecosystem, I have chapters for each major accessibility group or disability group that iOS addresses. So we have a chapter about tools for blind users, primarily VoiceOver and Braille, then a low vision oriented chapter, a chapter for folks who need hearing accessibility tools, one for physical accessibility, one for speech related access. That's fairly new because last year Apple introduced a lot of speech related features. And then we transition from all of those accessibility groups into chapters about iPadOS and about how to manage your iOS device generally with a perspective on accessibility, and then Siri. Now it'll be Siri and Apple Intelligence. And then finally, there are a couple of chapters about apps. One is about apps that are included with iOS and how to use those in accessible ways. And then the second chapter is a compendium of apps that are particularly good and also happen to be accessible.
What are some of the major changes, especially regarding accessibility, that are new in iOS 18?
Well, for blind users particularly, I guess Braille screen input updates are the marquee feature. Braille screen input is a method by which you can use Braille characters to type on the touchscreen. And that's existed for a while, but they've added a lot of features to Braille screen input that make it easier to operate. There are some new gestures. And so I think that's the upgrade that people who use Braille screen input, and that's a surprising number of people. I actually didn't realize how high it was because I'm not personally a daily Braille screen input user. But a surprising number of people use it for dictation and for sending text messages. And people who are really more comfortable in Braille have really taken to these features, and Apple has given them a nice upgrade this year. Another one is the updates to the live recognition feature. They keep changing the names of these things, and they're actually called different things in different places, which is kind of confusing. But in the Magnifier app for a few years now, there's been something called detect mode, where you could detect the presence of a person or a door, for example. And what they've done now is they've put what they're now calling live recognition in the VoiceOver rotor. So that if you're not somebody with vision who wouldn't open the Magnifier app typically, live recognition is now available in the rotor, and it pops up as a VoiceOver-friendly interface that doesn't have a screen for you to worry about looking at. Basically, you just have to point your phone in the direction and enable the particular live recognition features that you want to use, and there you go. There are also some changes to the rotor in terms of being able to switch quickly between VoiceOver voices. There's some general updates to Siri that make it a little easier from an accessibility point of view, although those are their general updates. From a low vision point of view, there are some changes and simplifications to the Magnifier interface, which are kind of nice. And so it's not an update this year that's a huge, huge set of new features, but those are some of them that affect folks with vision impairment.
Well, we obviously can't get into all these in detail today, but it's nice to know what's available so people can dig in a little bit more. But I thought maybe we could talk about some of them in a little bit more detail to know what they're about. I understand this Braille improvement or enhancement has been quite a big thing. I'm not a real big Braille user myself, but I understand there are substantial modifications done to making Braille happen on the device itself. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it's implemented?
Well, for one thing, you could automatically invoke it from any text field. Previously, you had to go, and you know, it's easy enough to do it from the rotor. It's essentially a typing mode, so you can switch from one position in the rotor to another position and jump into Braille screen input. But now you can set it up so that whenever you enter a text field, Braille screen input becomes available to you. So if you're a regular Braille user, that's just much less fiddly. And then there are just more gestures to help you get in and out of it, to give you more Braille characters, to make it run faster. So I think it's just a sort of a streamlining of Braille screen input for folks who really like that feature.
And I assume that what you do is you just turn the screen sideways so it's longer left to right than it is top to bottom, and you pretend that there's six keys in the space bar and you type away.
Yeah, and you can do what's called a screen away mode or tabletop mode. Tabletop mode means if you put your phone flat on a surface, or iPad, put your phone flat on a surface, you could type Braille cells that way. The screen away mode actually lets you hold your device away from you so that your hands are pointed downward. And if that's more comfortable for you as a Braille user, that's been the case for a while. But, you know, with these added features, I think it's going to be even more convenient for folks.
If I'm using text with my iPhone, I generally like to do it with a Bluetooth keyboard. But if you don't have your Bluetooth keyboard handy, the Braille input can be quite easy and reliable for making that kind of input without carrying an extra device along.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who use iPads either have Bluetooth keyboards integrated, they have a case or something like that, or they have an iPad with a keyboard that they carry along with them. But for iPhone users, especially if you're just out and about, you might not have a keyboard. There are those little tiny folding iPhone keyboards you can get, but I don't actually know a lot of people who regularly use keyboards with their phones.
Well, and a compromise position is the Habel 1 Braille keyboard that isn't much bigger than the phone. It's just a little thicker. So you can carry around the external Braille keyboard without having something as big and cumbersome and wouldn't possibly go in your pocket as a QWERTY keyboard.
And that has real buttons, which is nice sometimes. And that point and speak can sometimes be useful if you can't see things. Tell people a little bit about that and how it works.
So point and speak is a feature that came out last year in iOS 17, which allows you to, let's say you have a microwave oven or a dryer or some other appliance that has labeled buttons. It has text under or above a button, and you know approximately where it is because you can feel the keypad, but you don't know exactly where it is. So what you do is you enable point and speak, and then you place your finger in front of the phone's camera so that your finger can be seen, and then you pass it over where you think the text is, and the device will read to you. So let's see, I've got my microwave. Is that where the 2 is, or is that where the 3 is? You can even specify whether the text you're looking for is over or under the label, because that can get confusing. So I think that's primarily what it's intended for, is for looking at things that you can touch or get near, like appliances in your home.
So that can be very helpful if you can't see those appliances and the displays on them.
Right.
So you also talked about the live recognition feature, and you talked about getting into it with the rotor, but I think there's another way of getting into it if you don't want to clutter up your rotor with lots of things, right?
Yeah, and it kind of depends on the way you want to use your device, I suppose. So the original way of getting into live recognition, which again was called detection mode, was through the Magnifier app. And Magnifier app, as the name implies, makes it possible for you to zoom in on text and see it at whatever size and color filter you like as a person with low vision. But if you're blind, then there's not really much reason to get into the Magnifier app. But those detection modes were in there. And so, for example, if you had a LiDAR-equipped phone, you could open up what's called people detection, and you could determine where a person was relative to yourself the distance and so forth. And then they added door detection. So you could do the same thing with doors, you know, as you're approaching a building or if you're in a hallway, where's the door? Is it open? What kind of a knob or a grabber does it have? So that stuff lived in the Magnifier app until iOS 18. It still does. And there are additional features. But what they've done now is they've put it in the rotor. And so if you're somebody who's going to use these features a lot, you might choose to put it in the rotor. In addition to having it in the rotor itself, they've created a voiceover interface for it so that if you activate it from the rotor, you can choose one of the several detection modes that are available on your screen. And because you might not want all of them enabled, you might only want door detection enabled. You might not need to have people detection or text detection or point and speak or any of those things. And so you can choose to turn them on and off individually. And as I said before, you don't have to, in that case, there's not a viewfinder as there is in Magnifier showing your camera what's out in front of you, because if you're a voiceover user, you probably don't need that. So the little buttons sit on top of your iOS interface. And then if you tune the rotor away from them, the buttons go away, or you can just turn off detection mode. So you have a couple of different ways of getting into these features.
So I'd just like to comment for any of our listeners who are so frustrated with their appliances. If you buy your own appliances, you can usually find one that has tactile buttons that you may not be able to read, but at least you can feel them. And we ran into an issue where we bought this very nice house that came with pretty new high-end appliances. And so we didn't want to replace them, but boy, it was a challenge making it so that Pete could use them because everything was a touchscreen. So we had to get pretty creative with raised dots that we put in places that were predictable.
Well, the other thing I've discovered as I have replaced various appliances in my home is if you're buying things online, you don't really know what those buttons are going to be like. So it's harder for you to find out, is that button bad? Like, I have low vision, so I can benefit from a backlit button or a button that is white text on a dark background as opposed to black text on a silver background, those sorts of things. And if I'm not buying those things in person, if a particular appliance I want is only available online, it's going to be really hard to find out about those. Very rarely there are accessibility-focused reviews. I know that the AFB magazine sometimes does those, and those are very helpful. But if you're buying online, you're kind of without a lot of information sometimes.
And more and more appliances and such devices are coming without real buttons these days, it seems.
True.
Now, another big thing that Apple is touting this year with iOS 18 is some of the intelligence features. And I know they may not necessarily be related to people with vision problems or other accessibility needs, but they are interesting. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of what we'll be seeing. It hasn't all been pushed out yet, but it's coming.
Right. That's the important thing to note. And Apple has been making a big point of talking about Apple Intelligence for several months. But as we have this conversation, the version with all of the Apple Intelligence features is not available, and they're rolling them out slowly over a few months. And so there's several interesting ones. There's one that will summarize your notifications. For example, if there's a text message thread and somebody has been writing you texts and you haven't had a chance to get to them, you can get a notification summary that'll basically tell you what the substance of that thread. And the same thing with email messages. For folks with blindness necessarily, but for people who have low vision and who enjoy emoji, there is a thing called Genmoji, which essentially allows you to say, I want to make an emoji that is this thing or these two things mashed up together. So I would like a panda playing a trumpet, and it will make a panda playing a trumpet. And if that is appropriate for the text message that you are sending, then you will get that. But those are a couple things. The basic goal of Apple Intelligence is to take information, what Apple calls your personal context, and find it for you wherever it might reside. So some of the examples that they've presented, not all of which are available yet, are that you can say, well, I know I had a conversation with my mom about her photo album. You know, when did that happen? Or help me find that conversation because I need some piece of information from it. And you're supposed to be able to send to do a search that is essentially that vague a request, and it will find, did that conversation happen in this text thread or an email or where? So the idea is it surfaces information that's already there with what Apple calls your personal context and other context, and brings it forward to you so that you can use it in any way you want to.
You've mentioned getting the summaries of strings of text messages and emails. And I've seen some of that coming, and it seems kind of interesting. It takes a little getting used to. It's kind of nice to be able to have iOS in a quick sentence or so summarize what a string of text messages is about without having to flick through all the messages and see what was relevant. And similarly for emails.
I think it's kind of a work in progress, though. I think I've seen things online. People who've had the betas have expressed concern that the summaries are not exactly what they would want. And so as the Apple and as the device itself learns more about the context and as people make these kinds of requests more, hopefully they'll get better. I think the watchword in the early days of Apple Intelligence is not to be too dependent on these kind of features. They're interesting and they might be able to help you, but they're not necessarily going to substitute for digging through that thread or set of emails to find the context. In other words, don't rely on it too much.
And the other feature that comes along with some of those is the ability to kind of rewrite something you've written in either a more professional tone or a lighter tone, et cetera, which could be kind of handy just for doing kind of a proofreading act.
Yeah, and I think it's going to depend. You know, some people are going to use it and love it. Some people like me who make their living as a writer don't even want to hear about it because it can't be what we as writers would expect it to be. But if you're trying to construct, say, a business email, and that's not something that you normally do, or maybe you're in a hurry, or maybe you need words that will make you sound impressive to your boss or to your client or whoever it is, there's nothing wrong with taking a draft of that. And again, you know, make sure you read what's provided to you and see whether that's what you actually want to go out, and don't rely on the AI to speak for you. Rely on it to create a draft and then edit accordingly.
And that's the way I often will use these AI tools. If you use it as a tool in conjunction with whatever else you're doing, I think it can be useful. So since we don't have an infinite amount of time, what else would you like to highlight with the remaining time that we have left?
Well, I'm going to talk about a feature called hover typing. And this is something for someone with low vision. And I experienced this a lot where even though with Zoom, you can use the keyboard and enlarge the place where the text is being typed so that you can see it, sometimes there's still kind of a mismatch. And sometimes I'm trying to fill out a form online, or I'm typing a URL or a text message or something like that, and I just can't see what I'm typing. Well, the hover typing feature basically gives you a text field right above the keyboard where the text that you're typing appears, and you have control of the font size and the color of that text. So especially if I'm just filling out a small amount of text and I want to make sure that I don't create any typos and embarrass myself, hover typing is a great way to solve for that. You can put it right there above the keyboard. You can put it at the top of the screen. You have various options for font and color. So it's a real flexible tool. I think it'll take people some getting used to because it does take a little bit of space on the page and you're like, why is there this big box? But if you're low vision and you're prone to typos, as I sometimes am, I think it's actually can be very helpful. And it's also nice because you don't have to have it open all the time. You can quickly enable it from Control Center or there are a couple of other, or using Backtap or any of the features that allow you to quickly access accessibility features will let you enable, turn hover typing on and off quickly. So I think for low vision folks, it's worth checking out and seeing if it's something you're interested in.
So it sounds like this is essentially showing you the last word or two that you typed or you're in the middle of typing in a larger font so you can see that just that text more readily.
Right, right.
Well, anyway, these books you produce every year can be very handy references, and I would encourage people, if they have any questions, to look them up. And they also come with updates, right, throughout the year?
Absolutely. And I should say that because Apple Intelligence is not part of the initial release of iOS 18, that there will be a subsequent update that will feature Apple Intelligence. Unfortunately, that's an update I'm going to have to charge folks for because it's going to take me a little while to put it together, and I want to give it some time after I release the initial book. So when people get the initial book, they won't really see a lot of discussion of Apple Intelligence in practice other than sort of an introduction that explains it. But then later on, if they want an update that includes Apple Intelligence, that's going to be available to them.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to get the latest edition of Shelley Brisbane's book, how to get hold of some of her other work and how to contact her.
Well, Shelley, maybe you can remind people what the name of the book is and where they can get this valuable resource.
The book is called iOS Access for All, Your Comprehensive Guide to Accessibility for iPhone and iPad. It is available from my website, which is iosaccessbook.com. I make it available in EPUB and PDF formats. And there are some people who can't decide which format they like, so I actually will sell you an EPUB and PDF combo version. In other words, it's two files that are in a zip file. And that's surprisingly popular. But if it's easier for you, you can also go to the Apple Bookstore and you can search for iOS Access for All and you can buy it that way.
So if somebody had a question for you, is there a way they could reach you?
Probably the best way is to find me on Mastodon, where I am Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-Y, at zeppelin.flights.
Do you have a social media presence besides Mastodon?
I am on Threads at Shelley's Podcast. I am on X. I don't really use that account, at Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-Y, primarily. And, you know, Instagram is Shelley's Podcast as well, so you can find me over there too. But I've spent most of my time at Mastodon, and then second up would be Threads.
And remind us about your various podcasts again and where people might get those if they want to hear more of you.
So Lions, Towers, and Shields is my podcast for the Incomparable Network about classic film. And by classic film, I mean films from, say, the 1930s to the 1960s. And that's over at theincomparable.com/LTS. I'm also a member of the Mac Accessibility Roundtable podcast panel, and that is at macaccessibility.net. And we come out every 2 weeks and we talk about everything Apple on that show.
You mentioned that you release updates of important changes to each book after it's been issued. But what happens if somebody's recently bought the book for the previous version of iOS and then a new version of iOS comes out?
That's a really good question. And what I do every year is Apple tends to announce its operating systems before they ship. And then on the day that the operating system ships, I switch on the website from selling you one book and then making you buy the next book to selling you the book, whatever book is available at that time. In this case, it's the iOS 17 version of the book. And then the iOS 18 version, when it arrives, you'll automatically get it for free. So that means anybody who buys it after iOS 18 ships, but before my book ships, will get that version for free. So they don't have to feel like they have to wait around and wonder when the book's going to come out.
As usual, you can find all of that information in the show notes associated with this episode, which is number 2448.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about accessible materials for the spiritual life. Accessible religious materials enable people to fully engage with their communities. We'll talk with Livia Thompson from JBI and Malachi Fallon from Xavier Society for the Blind about how each organization produces materials in Braille, audio, and large print to help visually impaired patrons participate in family and congregational events.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you enjoy the show, be sure to share it with a friend and tell others about it. And we hope to see you next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.